Hello, this is Tim R. of the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at NAWA. Due to a technical difficulty on my part, the file for Monday, November the 9th recording of Michael A. Cornbread is not available. However, Cornbread spoke the following Saturday night at the Winner's Circle at the United Methodist Church on Shamley Dunwoody. This meeting was led by Tim M., also the Monday Night Speaker Meeting Group. We were able to get this recording, which is virtually the same message, which we are so glad to be able to pass on to you here at aabluechipspeakers.org.
My name's Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. Just really gotten to know this fellow recently. I've seen him around for a few years, but heard him tell his story, and I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot from it, and I think it helped me a lot. And I know he does the deal, works with a lot of new people, and he's got the best combination for me of a speaker. He takes his sobriety very seriously, but he doesn't take himself very seriously. So please welcome Cornbread.
Good to be here with y'all guys tonight, and I am Cornbread, and I'm definitely an alcoholic. And, I want to welcome Newell to the meeting back there. Anyway, it's all right. Really good to be here. That was kind of an inside joke because she was raising her hand saying she'd never been here in the order, and she told her friend, "Oh no, don't tell him." So I had to make sure you knew it. So I'm originally from Glynn County, Brunswick, Georgia, and. Real quick, there's somebody in this room that was at Bridges of Hope. I used to go out to Bridges quite a bit, and I had a sponsee pretty much take his own life when he left that program about 2 weeks later, and this guy was out there with him, and he just told me he had 5 years. What a miracle. So anyway, that's good stuff. When I come to a meeting here, that is great. But I'm originally from Glynn County. My dad, I've got a dad and a mother. Guess we all do, huh? Anyway, so I have parents, and I've got a sister, and I've still got some grandparents alive. I kind of like to go through a lot of the. I'm kind of quick on the drunk-a-log, or whatever you want to call it. I have some curricular activities in my story besides alcohol, and I try to call that overhead welding. If you don't know what that is, get with me after the meeting. It'll pretty much bring you in here on your knees. Overhead welding's a great tool to run you back in really quick. So if you're not done yet, I could suggest some things that'll make you come back pretty quick. But I was blessed. My dad, at a young age, my dad decided he was going to get sober. My dad's got 29 years now in recovery. And he told my mother, said, "You're either going to get sober or get out." She done exactly what I would have done, which is get out, if I wasn't done. And so she left. So my dad worked as a deputy fire chief in Glynn County, still is. Doesn't mean he does a whole lot, but he's there physically, and he's a good man. He's just a little overweight. He worked at Flea Tech, which is pretty neat because, you know, dad come in, he'd be all skin up, and I'd say, "What happened, Dad?" He said, "Well, I was running from the police today." Basically, what they do is they train cops, and what you are is a bad guy. So they send you out into town with this car, and you run like hell until they eventually catch you and beat you all to hell. So it's a great experience for him, and definitely for me, because I didn't have to deal with that. But I did later on in real life and a real criminal. But so I was raised up basically in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'd come in here and knew how to talk out here. I knew how to, you know, they'd have an open discussion. I probably had the most... you know, profound, you know, share. I mean, I was born and raised in here, man. I knew how to talk it, but I did not know how to walk it outside of these rooms. And so I came in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for many, many years, probably 12 to 14 years. Some of it's a blur, but I've been to all the halfway houses around town. If you'd like to know where one with a little bit better qualities and stuff, get with me after the meeting. But so I've been out to all the halfway houses, and early on, at a young age, my dad had, God bless his soul, I'm not going to say how many wives, but let's just say more than five. So he had a great picker, you know, he was good. And he was married to this one lady, and she did not like my dad to smoke cigarettes. And so he told her I quit. Well, my dad didn't like me smoking cigarettes, right? And, well, the deal was I knew he was still smoking and I knew where he hit them. And I knew if I stole them, he couldn't say nothing because I'd turn him into his wife. So I had an out there. So I smoked his cigarettes and he'd, you know, frown at me every day. But I was like, go ahead and say something, buddy. Turn you in to your police wife. So it's a good experience. So, and I started drinking early, pretty early, in my early teens. And I like to skip school. I like to steal cars. So I'm going to get into some of the funnies, and then I'm going to go right into the book and the steps after I came in and got sober. Hope to God the last time. And I would skip school. And my sister, she was a narc. She was a snitch. At least that's what we call it nowadays. And every time I'd skip school or something, I'd come and she'd tell on me on everything. Well, at this particular time, I'd skip school, and I used to go down to this outlet mall, which they really don't have many of them anymore, but it was an outlet mall, and I would skip school, and I'd be drunk, and I'd be, I like to smoke marijuana, and I'd be down there all tore up, and any time I'd see the fire truck, I'd definitely have to hit the bushes, because they would call my dad, which is their boss, tell them they'd spotted me somewhere, so always be aware of that fire truck sound, so I can dip somewhere and hide. Well, at this point, my dad was coming around a corner. My dad had 16 speakers and two boosters in his truck. So you could hear him from miles away if he was in his personal ride. He, you know, ZZ Top and that kind of thing. There's more to the ZZ Top. We'll discuss that in a minute. But so he comes around a corner, and I see him coming. I'm drunk. I'm high as a bird, man. And I was like, oh, man, where am I going to go? So I look over, and it was this dumpster. I was like, there's my hiding hole. So, boom, right into the dumpster I go. And he rides by, man. I mean, you know, he didn't see me, so I thought. So that afternoon, the bus comes by, and here I come walking out like I'm, you know, getting off the bus, you know. And I walk inside, and my dad said, how was school today? I said, Dad, it was the best day I've had in a long time. He says, that's very interesting, boy. You smell like a dumpster. I said, what the hell are you talking about? And he's like, boy, you can't get away, son. I've done it all, buddy. So this is crazy, man. So I didn't tell this in my last story, but when he did that, he did call my probation officer and the police officer. They came to the house and I was going to whatever, and I told him, I was going to run, and the cop said he was going to shoot my legs off and start crying like a little bitch. But anyway, very interesting. And so my dad done a lot of these things, slicking me out on some of my so-called slickness. And another time, my dad went to a lot of meetings in his early sobriety, tons of meetings. And he went to a meeting, and I'd stole this car. And it was a really nice car. I had a V8, I think it was a Camaro, T-tops. So I stole the car, and of course I wrecked it. I eventually hit a ditch. Anyway, police were called, and cops get there, and they were questioning me. I said, well, you don't understand, I've got kidnapped. And they said, you've been kidnapped? I said, yes, sir. So anyway, so I get down to jail. They call my dad. Dad comes down and gets me, puts in the truck, and he says, boy, I'm going to tear you. What happened? I said, Dad, I got kidnapped. He said, all right, stick to the story, boy. So I did. So I got me this public pretender for teenagers or whatever it was back then. And back then, they slapped you on the wrist. Nowadays, you steal a car. I don't care how old you are. You're going to Jackson. And anyway, so I court comes up. I've got this public pretender, and she's a female. That's great for me. Great, great, great. So she believed my story. She did. She believed it. I couldn't believe it. She believed it, but she did. So I thought I had this case done, whooped, no problem. They're going to believe that I was kidnapped. So I go to court, and judge, you know, presented whatever it was he was presenting. And he said, so what happened? I said, sir, I've been kidnapped. I was actually kidnapped in a stolen car. And he says, well, that sounds a little odd. He says, well, what did he look like? I said, well, he had this long beard, kind of longish grayish hair. And the judge says, I know who it was. I thought, got it, buddy. He says, there's a cross between ZZ Top and Jesus. So that didn't work out too well. So I got 10 years probation, slap on the wrist. So anyway, so I'd be going to school and fighting and, you know, causing all the trouble and real hard-headed. I was just active addiction, man. I mean, I was totally gone. So I go to school and stuff. And my dad, I come home one day, and he says, you know what, boy? I'm going to let you skip a whole week of school, man. I said, Dad, are you serious, man? He's like, oh, yeah, man. But you're going to go on, like, a camping trip. I said, oh, Dad, that's awesome, man. Thank you so much. He said, now go pack your bags. So I went and packed my bags, and, you know, I'm going to go camping. Got a knock at the door, answered her door, and there was a big old sergeant guy there, and he's, you know, it was not camping. It was boot camp. And I didn't pack my bags, so I was pissed. And they load me up in the van. They get you out there, you know, strip you down naked, spray you with this Lysol stuff or whatever it was. And anyway, so I was devastated, but he set me up for the okey-doke. So I had to boot camp for a week. And very interesting. They make you go up on these high buildings and, rappel and fall back and trust others and all that crap. I don't trust nobody. So what they do with me when I got up there, and plus I was scared of heights, and I look back and I'm like, are you kidding me, dude? Climb down that wall? So they push me over. So here I go over the wall. I'm scratching the wall trying to get back up, so I'm all scratched up. So Dad comes down there after the week. I graduate boot camp, and I get in the truck. He says, so how was your camping trip? I'm like, Dad, that's not even funny. He said, well, I got a question, boy. Did the cat get a hold of you? Look at your arms. Dude, it's not funny, Dad. So anyway, it was entertaining. He had a lot of fun. And so years go by. I'm coming in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Just could not get a grasp on it. I wasn't quite ready. I thought eventually I could control my drinking and have one or two. I don't know if y'all can relate to that or not. But it never worked out well for me. But so I finally got shipped to the hospital, and they said, we're going to send you to Atlanta. We think that we need to tell your dad to get you out of town before you get yourself in big trouble. And I thought, well, he'll never do that. You know, I don't have any family in Atlanta. Atlanta's a big city. I'm from small town, Brunswick, Georgia, Glenn County. He'll never send me. Well, he was there in about 20 minutes with a one-way ticket on Greyhound. And if you know anything about overhead welding, you can assure you I lived on the downtown streets of Greyhound when I got here. It was like heaven to me. So I stayed downtown for a while. And then I figured out the halfway houses in the area. Like I said, all of them. The first one that I experienced was Peachford House, which is now Sober Living America, I believe. I'm not sure now, but it did switch names. It is Sober Living America. But anyway, it was an interesting place. I remember when I got there and I called my dad. I said, Dad, this place has got some big old cockroaches, man. They come out with machine guns at night, man. There's like four people to a room. I mean, this is a bad experience. He said, well, hang out, buddy. And he hung up the phone. Don't call me back. And so I was scared, man. And the first guy I met here that sponsored me here was Billy King. I'm breaking his anonymity. I don't think he'll say much. He's passed on. But that was my first sponsor here. And he relapsed after about 9 years on prescription pills. He had about 9 years sober and went back out and took his life in Tucker on the train tracks. So, you know, just because we may get multiple years doesn't mean that that disease won't tell you you ain't got one. Nine can tell me that, too, if I'm not spiritually fit. So, anyway, so I went to a bunch of the halfway houses. I've been at a crisis center. I've been in all the places except Peachford Hospital. I never had enough money to go in there and eat their food, so I had to deal with the crisis center. And but anyway, so I was I'm going to tell a couple more. A couple of funny stories when I was in these halfway houses, and then I'm going to go into a solution. But I was at the halfway house, and I had been up all night, all day, probably a couple days. I always like to use in halfway houses and get high because it was a safe place. You understand? So I hit out in halfway houses and done drugs and alcohol. It's a great experience. And so I was at this halfway house, and. And I had the one mores. I don't know if you guys experienced, happen to have one more, but I have on multiple occasions. And at this occasion, it was really on me. And I had no choice. So I told the guy that was supplying the welding rods to hang out across the street that I'm going to go get some money so I can buy some of them rods he had, right? And he said, well, how are you going to do that? I said, I'm going to rob that store. And he says, have you ever done that? I said, oh, hell yeah, I've robbed a store before. I ain't never robbed a store in my life. And I did not have a gun, but I did have a finger. Check it out. So that's how I walked in this store, man. It's my finger in my shirt. My eyeballs were stuck out of my head. And, you know, you couldn't tell. Oh, my God, it was pathetic. So anyway, so the glass in the store is about this thick. They got bars on it. I'm in the hood, of course. That's where they sell these welding rods at. And so I get in there, stick my finger in my shirt, and I said, give me all your money. So the guy come around the corner with a stick and run me out of there. Ching, chong, ching, chong, ching. So I went back to the halfway house, and at that point, I kind of thought, I was like, wow, just might be a little problem. And I like to tell you that I stayed sober. No, don't think so. So a little bit later on, I was still at that same halfway house and still doing what I do. And I left there and got locked up for possession of cocaine. And I've never had a felony. I've been charged with multiple felonies, never been convicted. And these officers locked me up, and they were black officers, and they took me to jail. I thought they're just prejudiced. I didn't think of, well, I'm in the hood, white as a ghost, sticking out like a sore thumb. But, you know, don't think like that at that point. So, anyway, so they put me in jail. 2 months goes by. Here they come, and they come to get me to go to court. I'm scared, man. So they put me in a car, and they said, listen, man. He said, the best thing you can do, boy, is keep your mouth shut in that courtroom. It's in your best interest not to talk to nobody. I thought, are you out of your mind? So I get up in there, and I'm like, you know what? What do I got to lose, dude? I'm going to prison. So I just ride it out. I ain't going to say nothing. So the judge calls my case, paperwork, evidence, blah, blah, blah. And the officer said, we don't have the paperwork. It's not complete, and we've lost the evidence. Throw it out of court. Release. Wow. Wow. Crazy. So I get out to the car. They transport me back. You know, they don't release you until you get back, do all the paperwork, all that stuff. And this was DeKalb County. And they get me up there, and they pull over at the store, and they opened the back door, and they took my handcuffs off. They said, now, come here. They walked me up to the front seat. They had my cocaine. They had my little curricular stuff that goes with it, blah, blah, blah. And they had the paperwork, all the signatures. And they said, now, don't come back in our hood. Do you understand me, boy? Threw my handcuffs back on, threw me back in the car. I've never seen them officers since. They give me a chance. Now, here again, I like to tell you that I stayed sober. Don't think so. I've done a lot more experience than after that. I lived on those streets and in every halfway house here in Atlanta for about 3 years before I actually came in and done some work. You know, I've been blessed with good sponsorship since I got here and was completely done. So I'm going to go ahead and go into, what time is it, y'all know? 8:25, sweet. I'm right on target then. All right, so the last time, there's one important thing to me that when you get here is that you be ready. You know, you hear in Alcoholics Anonymous that if you're not, you know, that if you come in and you keep going back out, Alcoholics Anonymous has ruined your drinking and drugging. Well, I never had experience of it being good then. Because I was raised up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I always was, you know, I always knew that I had a problem. Trust me, I kind of did. But I really didn't want to look at it too close. And I do, you know, my spot, and I be done when you get here. You know, if you're not done, please, man, I think I got about $20 in my back pocket. Please let me give you that 20 and go back out there and finish, man, so you come in here ready. Hopefully you make it back. Because it sucks, man. I hate to see it. You know, a lot of us don't make it back. But anyway, so when I got here and was completely done, I remember where I was at, drinking in a apartment with no power, no running water. I remember that. I remember how I felt. I remember that hopelessness, that despair. Crazy, 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 man. And I remember. And I was completely done when I called. And I called a guy named Charles. He moved to Florida. Probably in the last few years. Anyway, I called him and another guy that he sponsored, I think. And anyway, they came, but they asked me on the phone, Cornbread, are you sure that you're done? You sure? Have you had enough? I said, absolutely. So they came and got me. And they took me to Peachford Hospital. Used to have a meeting. And that's where I picked up my, hope to God, last white chip. I picked it up there. And I was completely done, man. And they sent me... Charles was connected with this halfway house called Focus, which is usually for vets. He was kind of connected with them people. He was a vet. And he got me in there. And I stayed there about 30 days before I thought it was a great idea. A vet there had no legs and was in a wheelchair, and I was going to stab him with a fork. That was a great sport, man. And so I called Dave Kay, which is a close friend of mine, and he used to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. He's not anymore, but he's still a wonderful friend. I was at his house today, real close with his wife and kids. Got a key to his home. But anyway, he was in here at this point, and he had about 3 or 4 years in. And I called him, and he says, "I tell you what, Grant, pack your bags. You can come live with me, pay rent, and I'll put you to work," because he owns a big company here in Atlanta. And I agreed to it. I mean, you know, what else do I got to do to stab a guy with no legs? So he came, got me. And when I got there, he says, "There's one condition, man." He said, "You're going to go to a lot of meetings. You're going to get a sponsor. You're going to work the steps, and you're going to follow me everywhere I go. I can't trust you." And he had good stuff in his house, and you're damn right you can't trust me, because we'll get into that when I go through the steps up here from the podium. But so I moved in there, and every time he had to go take a poo, he would have me follow him. Man, that was some stinky shit. Do you hear me? So so I moved in there, and they had just started this group called the Monday Night Titans at Biscayne on Monday nights. I don't know if any of you guys have ever been there, but it's a great, great meeting. So I'm one of the originals. There must have been about six of us back when we started that group, which is now a lot of young people, and it's a pretty good-sized group. So blessed to be a part of that group. It was my original home group. Anyway, there was this guy named Scott Jay that led the discussion there, and he was a pretty big guy and pretty curl in the book. And after the meeting, I knew that if he sponsored me, I probably wouldn't buck as much on him. So I asked him to carry me through the steps, and I asked him to sponsor me. I didn't know too much about the steps, because I always just thought you read them on the wall. I didn't know there was any kind of action behind them. And he said, "Well," he says, "are you completely done?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yes." He said, "You sure you want me to sponsor you?" I said, "Yes." He said, "No problem. Be at your house in the morning. We're going to go over 1, 2, and 3. "The whole home, Bubba, you're going to have to back up, son. What are you talking about in the morning?" He said, "Well, if you want me to spot you, I'm going to be at the house in the morning. I know who your boss is. I know where you live. You're going to start going through the steps if I spot you." I said, "Cool." Wasn't too excited about getting up in the morning doing any step work. So we got right into the book and to the solution. So that's really the most rest of my story now is going to be in the solution. I don't like to talk too much about drunk logs. I think we all know how to get drunk and use other chemicals, don't we? Everybody know how to get high in here? Sweet. Good thing. Yeah, I'm a expert. So what I really want to talk about is what happened as I was going through that. Now, remind you, when I first got sober, the steps were pushed to me. It depends on the guy. I sponsor others now. It depends on the person. If a person's never been in Alcoholics Anonymous ever, like tonight, he asked if anybody had never been to an AA meeting that was here. If there was, my story would have probably been a little bit different, because them kind of guys, they don't understand the steps, they don't understand sponsorship, they don't understand nothing. They've never been in. So it's a different kind of way to go through the book. But if you've been in here and you just playing games, going in and out, I'm going to push like hell. You hear me? I'm going to push, buddy. I got a guy right now about 50-something days sober. He's on a 4-step. Damn right he's on a 4-step. It saved my life, man. There was no plan when I got here this time. None at all. It was serious business. And so step one, there's two parts to step one. And it says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. No crap. I mean, you know, you go into a store with your finger and your eyeballs out of your mind with bulletproof glass that thick, there might be a little problem. And my life was unmanageable. I couldn't decide on which halfway house to live in. I think that's pretty, you know, sums it up. Step one was the only one that you had to work perfectly. You had to be totally convinced, man, that you cannot drink no matter what. Cannot use drugs no matter what. Period. Period. No doubt. And I was there, man. I was inside. I knew I was done. Pretty good. Now, the life unmanageable part, I still struggle with that at certain times of my life today. Sometimes my life can still get unmanageable because I'm controlling my life again. Every time I start controlling it, disaster. So step two, came to believe in a power greater than herself. Well, I didn't really have an issue with God or nothing, but I remember when I was going to a book study, they said a Christian used to talk about, or Larry, I don't know if you've ever been to that one, but Glumlot book study. It used to be a men's. It's co-ed now. Said that you believe in a power when you're out there, because if you needed a drink and it was 110 degrees outside and there was a bottle of liquor under your seat, wouldn't you drink that liquor? That's a power greater than you. So that's one way to look at it. A group can be a power. A group can be your power when you get here. I used a group a lot back then, and I still do at times. My stuff kind of fluctuates, man. I went to church after having 3 or 4 years. I wanted to get more connected spiritually, so I tried church again. I don't attend church today. Still don't feel real comfortable in a church. AA is my church, and I'm blessed. Some people, I've got friends that have come in here, got recovered. They're preaching now. Just my story. So I don't see anything wrong with church. If somebody attends church, and the book talks about that, we don't get into that controversy. But anyway, and then step three, made decision to turn our will and our lives over to care of God as we understood Him. At that point, He took me, and it went to page 64. Right before 64, we read some paragraphs, and then we got into third step prayer, got on our knees together, said the third step prayer, got up, and He handed me a four step paperwork. And I was making a decision to go forward through the rest of the steps to build a relationship with a power greater than myself. And so that's what happened. So I got on the four step. Made a searching and fearless, more inventory of ourselves. The thing about a four step, there's how many of us out here are dummies? Oh, I'm the only dummy in the room. Impressive. All right, so I'm definitely a dummy. So he gave me a paperwork. I rode the short bus. How many of you rode the short bus? I'm not ashamed, man. I'm all game, you know what I'm saying? But my short bus did have the 22s, and they had the spinners. I was a cool kid on the bus, and I sat in the very back, and I was very handicapped. But anyway, so I was a dummy. So he gave me this paperwork that basically was almost like checking boxes and giving brief descriptions. I mean, a dummy could do it. A six-year-old could do it. So that's what he gave me to do my four-step on. Well, we get to five. Admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. One of my biggest secrets, I don't tell it in a setting like this, but Larry and Christian done that book study. He was real thorough, and they done it all up on the wall and chalkboarded out and stuff. It was a sweet gig, man. I miss that book study. I miss the men's book study. And anyway, he wrote out his biggest secret. And I thought, dude, oh my God, he just said my secret. So just, we might think that we might have something that that nobody else has done, or, you know, it's so terrible. There's somebody in this room that has done it, I promise. Promise you. After that meeting, I ran up to Christian. We took a walk, man. We talked about it, and I released that. And that is impressive. Very impressive. So I've done a thorough fourth and fifth. Okay? And then immediately after, on the following page after six, I do believe, is six and seven. They're all back to back. They're within an hour of completing a fifth step. It's clear cut directions in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Six is, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And mine was, every now and again, I'll snatch one or two of those back. That's just been my experience with character defects. I get rid of some, I'll let God hold them, and then I need to borrow a few of those. So, anyway, and then seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings, and then eight. My eighth step was basically taken, a lot of it was taken off of my fourth. And they had a paper for that too. The nows, the maybes, the nevers, all that good stuff. So that is already, most of my list was there, which is made a list of all persons who had harm and clean will and vacuums them all. So I want to talk a little bit about that one. And so I had a cousin that worked offshore. So he worked on a tugboat. So he was gone a lot. He was a nerd. He didn't do drugs or alcohol. To me, you're a friggin' nerd. I mean, you're wasting your life, man. So he wasted his life. And I was raised up with him. I was very close to my cousin raised up as kids. We were kind of like brothers, but like I said, he didn't drink or drugs, so he was a geek, and I always hung out with him because he had nice things, but he was stupid because he didn't do drugs or alcohol, and I had nothing. Makes a lot of sense, right? So, anyway, so he was offshore a lot. I had a key to his home. My grandparents had bought me a fifth wheel and put it on that property, which some of that property was supposed to be mine. They give him his half, and they did not give me mine. They actually sold it to him later on, even after I was sober, which was okay. And I'll talk a little bit about that. But anyway, so when he gave me a key to his home, so anytime I would have dates, any girl that would date me at that time was pretty crazy. We were both on drugs, and you never know. But anyway, I'd take her on a date. I'd get her come back to the house. I wouldn't take her to the fifth wheel, man. I mean, you know, Jesus. So I took her over to his spot because he was offshore because he wasn't home. And she'd always say, this was a nice place, man, really nice stuff. I said, appreciate it, girl. You know, I'm big, you know. I'm going to tell her, you know, that fifth wheel across the street is falling apart. And that's me. But I always done it on my cousin, you know. I looked a little bigger than what I was. So anyway, so eventually I got really bad. And when I was on drugs, that I had to have the one mores. Here I am again with the one mores. And I did not have a choice. I opened up that guy's door to his home and took everything he had and sold it. And I thought that he had no clue. So what I did was, after I stole all this stuff, opened the door up, got it all, sold it all. Then I called the police after I got my fix. So here I am. Eyes this big. Called the police on myself, telling somebody robbed him. But before I did that, I locked the door back and I kicked his door in, so it did look like a robbery. Kind of, you know, play this thing. It's great. It's a great experience. So, and then, so they eventually had called him that day, and I did not know this at the time, but they called him and said, look, we know who robbed you, and it's your cousin. He's on drugs really bad. He said, do you want us to go and prosecute? And my cousin said, no, I'll take care of it. My cousin saved me prison. And he called my family and told my grandparents they better come get me, and they did. I like to talk a little bit about this funny, too, where I'm in the same story that I would get locked up. My dad gave me one get-out-of-free-jail card, and I used it up pretty early. I mean, you know, go figure. But anyway, so I'd get locked up. Well, he wasn't going to come get me, man. I said, Dad, will you at least put some money on my books? Man, I need Honey Bun. You know what I'm saying? Hook me up. And he would not. He refused. So I found God. Every time I went to jail, I found God. Trust me, man. I was a great higher power when I was locked up. So, you know, so what I would do is I'd shave my head, get me a Bible, and tell my dad, Dad, I need to see Grandma, please. So he'd send Grandma up there. I'd be out of jail within 24 hours. And I'd get back, and they had moved my fifth wheel back to my grandparents when they told my cousin, and my cousin called them and told them to move me out. So my fifth wheel was at my dad's property, but my grandparents stayed out there because they retired. That's a whole other story. But anyway, and when I got out of jail one time, my grandparents had the phone wired outside, and I did not know it, and they were listening to my phone calls. As soon as I got out of jail, after I found God, I was going to go to church, and I was saved. They were listening to my phone conversations of purchasing curricular activities on the telephone immediately. But that didn't matter. My grandma loved me. Every time I went to jail, I always found God, and Grandma always got me out. God bless her. She's still with me. And so as I was going through my ninth step, of course, my cousin was the probably never. So, I mean, you can never tell that guy that. And Dad was always at the top of the list. I know he decepted. He was in recovery, blah, blah, blah. Well, my sponsor decided that he was going to organize that list. My cousin was the first one. And I told my sponsor, I said, I can't do that. He says, oh, yeah. He said, you're not sorry either. You're a sorry ass, but you're not sorry. You hear me? I was like, what do you mean? He said, we don't go down there and say we're sorry. You stole from that guy. You owe him money. You don't have a license and a car, but you can save up money and take Greyhound. That's the first amends we're going to make. So now you work and you save and you go down there and make that boy an amends. So I don't know how much he owes you. How much I owe him. He says, it doesn't matter. He'll tell you. And I was scared, man. I was like, whew, tell him, oh, no, he don't even know. Yeah, he did. He knew the whole time. So anyway, so I saved up, had $100 to give him. I called him. I said, look, I said, I'm coming into town for just a few days on Greyhound. I'd like to sit down and talk to you. He said, okay, cool, come on. So I came into town. He met me, and I said, there's something I got to tell you. And I started crying immediately. I'm kind of, you know, kind of tenderhearted, and he said, I know what it is. I said, no, buddy. No, you don't either. Not this one, buddy. He said, oh, yeah. But you can go ahead and talk. I said, well, I want to give you this money. I said, I was the one that robbed you. He said, no shit, Sherlock. I said, well, here's $100. He said, absolutely not. I said, yeah, absolutely. Yes, you got to take this money, man. My sponsor said, you got to take it. And he said, well, you can tell your sponsor I'm not going to take your money. Not going to take your money, but I do want my cousin back. This one always burned me out. So he would not accept my money. And amazing, man. And we've, let's just say we built up a relationship. That is one of my closest friends today. I go home on vacation. I go home for Christmas, Thanksgiving. It doesn't matter when I go home. Most of the time, he is not home. He stays offshore a lot, working on the tugs. After that incident, he had got an alarm. And his house, if you go in that thing without putting in that alarm code, it's went off on me before. Makes a hell of a racket through the neighborhood. So when I go home now, he's offshore. I know that alarm code today. And that's taken some few years. But we are very, very close. Also, me and my father are extremely tight. My father is my best friend. I heard from him 3 times today. Sometimes it gets a little overwhelming calling. But sometimes I take stuff for granted also. I just went home recently. Make a long story short, drugs and alcohol have taken my family over. There's a lot of stuff going on with my sister, etc. And they both work for my father. My father is a commercial fisherman. My family's always been in commercial fishing. He needed to go on vacation for a week. He couldn't trust them. Sometimes we get paid cash through the company, and checks. And my father called me, asked me if I would come home for a week to help run that business while he's on vacation, to deal with the cash and the checks. If that ain't friggin' a miracle, I don't know what is, son. There's no way 10 years ago I'd have been doing that. Continue to take a personal inventory. That's not always easy for me. The last 4 days has been a disaster at work. I'm also blessed. When I got here, I was homeless, no car, no license, definitely was unemployable. David employed me for 3 years, God bless his soul. I own a company today, Georgia Green Care. If you look it up, georgiagreencare.com, I am blessed to be a slave, because that's what it is. Does not mean you've got money. I'm the brokest I've ever been. When I was out there, I robbed, stole, broke windows. Today I don't do that, so I stay broke. But I do love Starbucks. So I've been blessed. And so continue to take your personal inventories. The last 4 days have been really rough at work. The other day I've got a real funny story. I got off work, man. I was in a terrible mood, man. My roommate come home, and he was trying to talk to me. I'm trying to tell him, man, I'm in a crappy mood. If I say too much, I'm going to hurt feelings. I'm going to say stuff that I don't mean because I'm angry. I'm irritated. I'm mad. I'm just a slave, you know. And so I go out there to cook chicken on my gas grill. Look forward to cooking this chicken all day to kick back and relax and eat some chicken. And the gas went out halfway cooking the son of a bitch. So anyway, so chicken went in the woods and probably some birds got it. But when we were all complimented, at that point I was wrong. The poor chicken did not mean to be fed to the birds. So 11, sought through prayer and meditation to approve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Prayer and meditation is a continuous thing, morning and at night. I don't always get on my knees. It's just me. When I first got sober, I had to. I was told to. Today, I don't always get on my knees, but I do have a conscious contact and I do meditate. I have to get my bearings together before I open up that bedroom door and somebody starts talking. I just don't know how to react still today without doing that. It's very important. The alcohol and drug, the obsession to use drugs or alcohol has been removed. I am a recovered alcoholic. That does not mean I'm not an alcoholic. It just means that obsession has been removed, period. I don't obsess over using alcohol or drugs. During the summer when it's hot at work, you go into a store, they got them 55-gallon drums full of, you know, cold 45s, steaming off of there. Have you ever seen that steam when it comes up? It says cornbread. They look really good in there. Oh, man, my mouth fucking waters. I mean, water, sorry, my language. I don't obsess over it. The thought comes in, it goes right out because I know I can't have one. Have y'all ever eaten Moose Tracks made by Mayfield ice cream? Moose Tracks? I want you to do me a favor tonight and then give me a call. Go to the grocery store, get some of that, get a gallon, have one scoop, and put it in the freezer. Never happened, I guarantee you. I can bet money tonight, actually. No, we'll be in Gambling Anonymous. Let's not do that. So 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholic and to practice these principles in all affairs. That's one of my favorites, man. That's something that I'm, I don't know, I don't say I'm talented, I'm just blessed. I get into sponsorship a lot. I don't mean that I sponsor 20 guys because I'm big old ego, because I don't. I don't believe that anyone, personally myself, this is my belief, should sponsor over 3 new guys at a time, period. If you are, believe it's done out of ego. That's just my opinion. If you don't like it, you've got a resentment, hope you got your sponsor's telephone number, give him a call tonight and say Cornbread has caused you to get a resentment. And when you get over it, I'll accept your amends pretty easy. Some people get into service. Some people are not, you know, really good at sponsorship. And I'm not trying to give nobody a loophole either, period. I think you need to sponsor others. Even if you think that you're not good at it, you can save somebody's life. So I don't want to give you a loophole. But some people are more into service, doing for groups, secretary, whatever. People get into making coffee, that kind of thing. My deal is sponsorship. I love sponsoring other men. They really save my life. It's not that so much doing for them. It's what they do for me without even having a clue what they're doing. I mean, you know, I'm always about Cornbread. I'm always about work. I'm always about what I can do, what I can get. I'm still selfish, man. I still have that selfishness. A lot less than I used to, but it's still there. And without newcomers, I'm always in self. So it's good to have a guy. And I have one new guy right now this time, and I'm blessed to have him in my life. I have 3 guys that have over a couple years of sobriety. Not because I sponsored them or I'm this big guy. I just was a channel to them from God, and I helped them get through the 12 steps. You know, it's interesting when guys do a 4th and 5th step and they're all scared and stuff. And then let's say that's all done, so we go by a month, however long it takes, and we get to 8 and 9, and they're talking about their amends. I say, what? Who is that? Cornbread, we've done a 5th step with you, man. You don't remember? Because I don't give a damn. That stuff that you're telling me is not for me, man. It's not. It's for you. And it's just I'm a channel. And so I don't remember a lot. I've been blessed in that part. And if I got a few minutes, I want to talk a little bit about a situation that's really amazed me tonight. That guy I'm talking about that's here tonight, I don't want to break his anonymity even though he's in here. His name is James. He was at Bridges, and Bridges of Hope. I used to volunteer a lot out there a few years ago when I was married. By the way, if you're thinking about getting married, and please wait until you at least have 5 years of sobriety, or give me a call. Let me explain some stuff to you. But she's a beautiful woman, great girl. I don't say that she ruined the marriage. I devastated that marriage, 95% of it. She is a good woman, but I'm happily divorced and accepting applications at this time. But anyway, so I used to go to Bridges a lot. And I was out there at Bridges, and this fellow was there with another one of my guys that I sponsored for about 2.5 years. He would go in and out of recovery. He was a Delta pilot. So he said on his first date, he was like 15, he flew his plane to go pick up his date. So he had a few dollars, you know what I'm saying, just a couple. I sponsored him off and on for 2.5 years. He just could not get it. So his parents own oil rigs, and they live out in Durango, Colorado. Long story, but this family's pretty wealthy, to say the least. Every time you pump gas in your car, you're pumping money in their pocket. So anyway, he just couldn't get sober. So they called me and said, what do you suggest? I said, I suggest you go to Bridges for 6 months. So he did. Make a long story short, he graduated. We knew something was wrong because every time he'd come home on pass, a car would be messed up because I'd drive his car when he was in treatment, or my ex-wife, and something was always wrong with that car, like he wrecked it or something. We didn't know it, but he was coming home doing, duster, it's computer keyboard cleaner. He huffed it. The reason he done that is because we couldn't detect whether he was getting high or not, and they couldn't either at the treatment center. Out there, them guys like to play a lot. They had got this toilet seat and got ghost pepper, and oh God, is there a halfway house in here? No ideas, all right, guys? So they took the ghost pepper and wrapped it around the commode seat of the toilet. So Art sat on that toilet, and his ass was burning, man. It was on fire. So he had no choice of turning in because he needed an ambulance. You know, something was wrong with him. So he went and told the office something was wrong with his butt. And no matter how much water he put on, it was burning. He needed to go to the hospital. So eventually one of the guys had to come and tell on himself and say, I'm the one that burned him. But anyway, James took care of that situation. You know, I was blessed. And anyway, so he graduated. Make a long story short, too. If you're not honest, you know, to be a sponsor, man, you can be honest with me. Or honest with your sponsor. You don't have to lie, man. We're just here doing the same thing, man. I'm not unique because my sobriety date is 62806, and it doesn't mean I'm special. I'm just another drunk just like you guys here tonight, man. I'm just another alcoholic, man. And he wasn't getting honest about everything. He got home 2 weeks later. His parents called me and said, Cornbread, you need to go check on him. He's not answering calls. I've done this a few times. Had to call an ambulance, get him revived when he was drinking real heavy. Make a long story short, I walked in that door and he was dead as a doornail. Been there about 3 days. He was friggin' bloated, fellas. I wanted to kick him in his ass as I was crying because he's selfish. You know, he's got two twin girls, a son. He was in the middle of a divorce. It's a disaster. Do not have to go out that way. And, you know, I've had to go on calls. Families call me. One of them, a couple years ago, a guy blew his brains out with a Colt 45. Whatever it was, big old gun, took a bullet to his head, and his parents' house at 2 o'clock in the morning. His parents cut on the bedroom light when they heard the gunshot and see their son's brains all over the walls. Police don't clean that up. At least could have went out to the woods. And so I've experienced a lot, man, and I enjoy working with other alcoholics. I love to have a good time in sobriety. I'm a big jokester. Hang out with me after the meeting. I'm a fool, and I don't believe getting sober means getting boring. I believe getting sober means you act crazy as hell and just don't drink or use. Try your best to stay out of jail. Thank God I haven't been locked up since I've been sober. I've come close. I'm still a fool. I'm not always perfect. I'm not perfect. Trust me. And I've been blessed, man. And I hope you got a lot out of the story. And golly, I feel like a circuit speaker, man. Two in a week. Anyway. Just ego there, no problem. But thank y'all. Thank you.
Thank you, Cornbread. Thanks very much.
If the river keep rising, water gonna overflow. If that river keep rising, flood water gonna overflow. Just like that old river, baby, it's my time to go.